I'm going to ask everybody to bear with me tonight. I'm catching a little bit of a cold. I'll try not to cough into the microphone too loud. Before we get started, in case you haven't been oriented, there are a number of forms. Well, first of all, my name is Michael Iacopino. I am counsel to the Site Evaluation Committee. To my left is Pamela Monroe, the administrator for the Site Evaluation Committee. The purpose of tonight's meeting is a public information session. During the course of the meeting tonight, we'll follow the agenda that was out front. We will start off with a presentation from the committee that I will narrate for you to explain a little bit about how the Site Evaluation Committee operates and how it works and what it does. That presentation will be followed by a presentation from the developers, the applicants, and they will put on a presentation about their project. We will then go into a question and answer period. There are questions. We ask that if you have a question for either the Site Evaluation Committee or the applicant, you take one of these green sheets and write your question down. As you can see, I have them going every which way. That's because we try to categorize them and organize them so that if we have a series of questions, for instance, about burying the lines, we go through those questions all in a series. It makes it a lot easier to learn about the project, to learn about the issues, if things are organized. After we finish the question and answer period, we will then go into the period that we call public statements. If you wish to make a public statement or comment about the project or about the Site Evaluation Committee, please fill out one of these yellow sheets. There are some of these are back there behind Irina Dorr, my associate, who will raise her hand right now. Behind her is some of these sheets. If you wish to speak tonight, please fill out one of these sheets and bring it up here. And finally, we have a blue comment card. And these are for people who may not want to speak or ask a question tonight, but might want to tell us how they feel about the project or about the process. And if you want to prepare a written comment, you can do that right on this blue sheet, and they will all become part of the record. Everything that we say here tonight is being recorded by our court reporters. A transcript will be developed after this meeting, and it will become part of the record in this proceeding. It will be reviewed by the subcommittee that is hearing this, that is sitting in this docket. That will include any written comments that are made tonight or at any point during the consideration of this application by the Site Evaluation Committee. One thing I'd like to ask you to do is, if you have a question that you want answers to, please write it down. Don't try to come up during the public comment or statement time and start asking questions of folks, because quite frankly, you're not going to get an answer at that point. Because we're trying to do these meetings in an organized fashion. So if you have a question, especially if it's a question that you think everybody will learn something from, please write it down and let's deal with it in the question and answer period. And save the statement and comment period for folks who want to give us their opinion or state something about the project or the committee's process. And that will actually make for a much cleaner record for the Site Evaluation Committee to review. Now, you might note that the Site Evaluation Committee itself is not here tonight. We are representatives of the Site Evaluation Committee, Ms. Monroe and I. There will be public hearings that the subcommittee in this case will be here to hear public comments and to hear from the developers as well. Those will be published on our website. And to my right, anytime you need any information about this application or any other application before the New Hampshire Site Evaluation Committee, the best place to check first is our website, which is www.nhsec.nh.gov. If you need to get in contact with us, the phone number for our administrator is 603-271-2435, and her email is up there on the screen, pamela.monroe@sec.nh.gov. So that's how you can get in touch with the committee. I'm going to go right into the presentation to explain a little bit about the Site Evaluation Committee, its process, and how it works. Site Evaluation Committee is created by a statute. That statute is RSA 162H. The statute has been recently amended in the last session of the legislature. But the purpose of the Site Evaluation Committee is to provide a balance of the benefits and impacts of site selection on a number of very important things for the state of New Hampshire: the welfare of the population, private property, the location and growth of industry, the economic growth of the state, the environment, historic sites, aesthetics, air and water quality, natural resources, and public health and safety. The state legislature has determined that all of those things are important, and it's important to have an agency that balances those factors, the impacts and the benefits to those factors, when determining where to site and how to construct, whether it be generating plants or transmission lines, but energy facilities. The second purpose of the statute is to avoid undue delay in the construction of new facilities. The third point is to provide full and timely consideration of all of the environmental consequences of a proposed energy facility. And also, fourth, to provide full and complete disclosure to the public about facilities that are slated to be built in the state of New Hampshire. And finally, to ensure that the construction and operation of energy facilities is treated as a significant aspect of land use planning, where all issues, environmental, economic, and technical, are resolved in an integrated fashion. In essence, the Site Evaluation Committee is the statewide planning board for energy projects. Our process is designed to integrate all of the various permitting processes, as well as environmental, economic, and technical issues. If you compare this to, if you wanted to develop a shopping mall, you would have to go to a number of different state agencies to obtain various permits. The purpose of RSA 162H is to have all of that done in what we call a one-stop type of one-stop or integrated system. The authority of the Site Evaluation Committee preempts the authority of your local planning boards and zoning boards. And again, it's a one-stop shopping or supermarket theory. Now, just because the Site Evaluation Committee's authority preempts local authority with respect to energy facilities does not mean that local authorities are not considered in the process. And the Site Evaluation Committee is required by the statute to consider the views of your regional planning commissions, your local planning boards, zoning boards, conservation commissions, as well as your municipal governing bodies. And in doing that, the Site Evaluation Committee will listen to comments provided from towns and cities along that are involved with the project. And in addition, it's in almost every case, local ordinances are provided to the Site Evaluation Committee so that the Site Evaluation Committee can understand what the rules are in those towns and cities, despite the preemption. The committee today consists of a number of state agencies and two public members. The chairman of the commission is Martin Honigberg. He is the chair of the Public Utilities Commission. His fellow two commissioners, Robert Scott and Catherine Bailey, also sit on the Site Evaluation Committee. The vice chairman of our committee is Commissioner Thomas Burak from the Department of Environmental Services. The Commissioner of Transportation sits on our committee, Victoria Sheehan. Our Dred Commissioner, Jeffrey Rose, sits on this committee. Also sitting on this committee is either the Director of the Division of Historical Resources or the Commissioner of Cultural Resources, and The commissioner is Mr. Van McLeod, and the director is Elizabeth Muzzy. Usually it's a director of historic resources who sits on the committee. And then we have slots for two public members. One public member has to be an attorney, and both have to have expertise in issues that come before the committee. Attorney Patricia Weathersby of Portsmouth, New Hampshire, is our public member. Unfortunately, our other public member, Roger Hawk of Concord, passed away last weekend. We do have an alternate public member that is appointed by the governor as well, and that's Rachel Whitaker from Berlin, New Hampshire, and she will be sitting on the subcommittee in this particular case. Each person who is a state official on the Site Evaluation Committee has the authority to designate somebody from their agency to sit on the committee in their place. The only requirements are that that person must be either a senior administrator in that department or a staff attorney. In this particular case, the actual subcommittee are the folks that are on the screen right now. Chairman Honigberg will sit. Commissioner Burak has appointed Craig Wright, who is a director of the Air Resources Division of the Department of Environmental Services, to sit in his place. Commissioner Bailey will sit. Christopher Way, who is the director of the Economic Development Division of DRED, has been appointed by Commissioner Jeffrey Rose to sit in his place. Commissioner Sheehan from Department of Transportation has appointed William Oldenburg, the Assistant Director of Project Development, to sit in her place. And then, of course, our public members, they don't get to designate anybody, but Ms. Weathersby and Ms. Whitaker are both assigned to this subcommittee that will consider this application. In addition to the committee members, there's another very important person who attends all of our applications, and that person is called Counsel for the Public. Counsel for the Public is appointed by the Attorney General. He represents, in this case it's a he, sometimes it's a she, but he represents the public in seeking to protect the quality of the environment and in seeking to assure an adequate supply of energy for the state of New Hampshire. Counsel for the Public has all the same rights and responsibilities and privileges that an attorney representing a party in a court case would have. In this particular case, Senior Assistant Attorney General Peter Roth is our Counsel for the Public. There's his contact information, but he's also here. I'm gonna ask him to stand up, introduce himself, and tell the folks what you can do for them, Peter.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Peter Roth. I'm a Senior Assistant Attorney General. I was appointed by Attorney General Joe Foster to represent the interests of the public in this case. I have been previously served as counsel for the public in a number of different cases involving other projects over the last 10 years. I have with me tonight an attorney who the counsel for the public has retained to represent him in this proceeding, and we will be working together. His name is Tom Pappas. He's here. He's with the Primmer Law Firm, and they're out of Vermont, but his office is in Manchester. We also have a very talented energy attorney from the Primmer firm who's not here tonight. He's from Littleton. My job in this case is to ensure that the public interest is met in the proceeding, and the statutory requirement is that it be the proper balance between the need for energy and the impacts on the environment. And the statute allows us to retain experts and to present testimony and to conduct investigations and to cross-examine witnesses and otherwise assist the process and assist the public in participating in the project or in the proceeding. I do not represent any particular member of the public, and so I can't provide any of you or your organizations direct legal advice or representation. I have to represent the interests of the broad overall public and largely a state interest. However, I am always very interested in hearing what people have to say about the project, and if they have any questions about the process or about what we're doing with respect to the process and the project. And the number on the screen here is my direct dial, and that's my email address, and I encourage and urge any of you to give me a call or or send me an email or both. And, you know, sometimes it pays to be a little persistent. Then contact me and let me know what you think or ask me any questions that you may have. And in addition, tonight you can feel free to tap me on the shoulder or greet me somewhere in the hall and give me a piece of your mind. So I look forward to working with any of you and let me know if there's anything I can do.
Peter is somewhat modest. He is extremely experienced in this area of the law. He has served as counsel for the public on most of the applications that have come before the New Hampshire Site Evaluation Committee. So he's a resource that is a very good resource for the people of the state of New Hampshire. One thing I wanted to address just before we get into what's required, what the application consists of, is to give everybody a little bit of an idea of what goes on before an application is actually filed with the Site Evaluation Committee. There are a number of things that an applicant is likely to do and that various state agencies will do. These things don't come up in a vacuum. It's not one day that the applicant or a developer comes in and just drops off an application. There are many state and federal agencies that an applicant will have to meet with before they even start preparing their application. There are things like our independent system operator, which runs the grid for New England. An energy generator or a transmission company obviously has to coordinate with the system operator so that they can get their electricity to market or build their transmission lines. There are obviously environmental and resource studies that begin long before an application is filed. There are early pre-permitting meetings where there may be meetings between various state or federal agencies and representatives of a developer so that a developer can find out what the laws are and what's needed to be done in order to get an application filed. There are regional planning commissions, municipalities, virtually every developer that comes before this agency engages in some kind of process with the government, the local government of where they want to build their facility. There are if you're an energy generator, obviously you need to deal with the transmission companies in your area. There are power purchase agreements that need to be negotiated, financing that needs to be obtained, consideration of tax issues. And then the very first step in once a developer has moved along through all of that process is to engage in pre-filing public information sessions. Those are sessions somewhat similar to this, but no representative of the Site Evaluation Committee is there. And before an applicant is permitted to file an application, it must hold a pre-filing public information session in each county where their project is going to be developed. So all of that goes on before an application is actually filed. When an application gets filed, that application has to contain certain information. The application, in this case, in this docket, is 27,000 pages, I believe. An application before the Site Evaluation Committee must contain sufficient information to satisfy the requirements of each state agency having jurisdiction under state or federal law, and must have a complete application for each of those state agencies with it. They also must pay the fees to each of those state agencies that they would normally have to pay. In addition, there's a bunch of details there that an application must contain. It must reasonably describe the type and size of each major part of the proposed facility. It must identify the preferred choice for the route or the site of each major part of the proposed facility. And I know everybody here is here for a transmission line project. Oftentimes, the Site Evaluation Committee is considering generators, whether it be a wood burner or gas burning facility, so that the issues are a little bit different and the statute is made to cover both. An application has to reasonably describe in detail the impact that each major part of the facility will have on the environment. It must describe any proposals that the applicant has for studying and solving environmental issues. It must describe, and this is very important, especially when we talk about some of the smaller projects, and must describe in detail the applicant's financial, technical, and managerial capabilities to site, construct, and operate the facility that's being proposed. It must document that copies of the application have been provided to the governing bodies in each community where the facility is proposed to be located. All applications must describe in detail the elements of and financial assurances for decommissioning the facility. And they must provide additional information as may be required to carry out the purposes of this chapter. And that chapter is the RSA 162H that I discussed right at the beginning. I'm going to skip for a second here. We have new administrative rules at the Site Evaluation Committee, which provide for additional requirements that must be met in an application. And in this particular docket, just so that you're aware, this particular application was filed before those new rules went into effect. However, the law says that this particular docket, when I say docket, I mean this case, will be governed under the new rules. However, the Site Evaluation Committee is required to permit the applicant time to make any amendment to its application that is necessary. And in this particular case, we notified the applicant on December 18th, 2015, requested that they make such amendments by January 22 of this year. So the application can be found on our website. It is, in this particular case, it's a very large document. There's all types of information contained in there. And I would encourage anybody who is interested in what's actually being proposed, that's where you're going to get the most detail. Now, I'm going to go back. The Site Evaluation Committee process is governed by this statute, RSA 162H, and the statute has certain time frames that the committee must meet. The first time frame is actually something the applicant must meet. I've talked a little bit about it. That is, they must schedule pre-filing information sessions at least 30 days before they file their application. Once an application is filed, the chairman of the committee, Chairman Honigberg in this case, was required to expeditiously make sure that that application got out to any state agency having permitting or other regulatory authority over various parts of the project. And the subcommittee also is required to expeditiously review the application in its totality to determine if it contains sufficient information for the Site Evaluation Committee to undertake its processes. And in this particular case, the subcommittee issued an order on December 18th, 2015, finding that the application was sufficient to carry out the purposes of the statute, and the application was, as we say, quote, accepted. Accepted doesn't mean granted. Those are two different words. It means that the application will now be reviewed by the Site Evaluation Committee. The Site Evaluation Committee can still grant the application, grant the relief requested in the application, or deny it. And we're going to go through a process that is governed by these timeframes in order to make that determination. We have a subcommittee has already been designated in this case. Within 45 days after the acceptance of the application, the Site Evaluation Committee is required to have five public information sessions, one in each county. I think tonight we're on our third one. We did Merrimack County on the 11th, Rockingham County on the 13th. We're doing Belknap County tonight. And then the next two are scheduled for next week in Coos and Grafton counties. These are the public information sessions that you're attending here tonight. Also, within 90 days of the acceptance of the application, we will hold a public hearing in each county. At the public hearing, the subcommittee will be present. The subcommittee will hear presentations from the applicant, but also will hear questions and comments from the public as well at those proceedings. And those are in the process of being scheduled. In this particular case, we have to complete all of those before St. Patrick's Day. Other important deadlines are that state agencies are required to submit their preliminary reports and proposed conditions to the Site Evaluation Committee within 150 days after acceptance. In this case, that's May 16th. And then they have to submit their final permits, conditions, other recommendations within 240 days of the acceptance of the application. And in this case, that means August 15th, 2016. Once that is done, the Site Evaluation Committee will begin what's called the adjudicative process. They will hold a hearing, just like a trial, similar to what you see on TV. There will be witnesses that will get in a witness stand and testify. Those witnesses will be cross-examined. There will be exhibits presented. And ultimately, at the end of that process, the Site Evaluation Committee will sit down in public, discuss the evidence that they have received, discuss what they think of it, deliberate on the issues. All of this is done in public, and ultimately take a vote, and then ultimately issue a written decision on whether or not the certificate of site and facility should be granted to the Northern Pass developers. In this particular case, that final decision must be made by December 19th, 2016, under our rules. Many of you are here tonight, so I'm sure that you're interested in participating. There are a number of different ways that folks can participate in the Site Evaluation Committee process. First, you can contact Counsel for the Public, who you've already heard from. That's a different number. That's the number that's up on the screen right now. It's just the main number into the Attorney General's office. That will get you there. That can get you to Mr. Roth as well. A second way that the public can participate is by attending the pre-filing public information sessions that were held, in this case, before the filing of the application. You can participate by attending meetings such as the one we're having tonight and have had last week and will continue to have next week. In addition, you can attend the joint public hearings where the subcommittee is actually present, and you will have the opportunity to speak directly to them or to ask questions of the applicant while the subcommittee is there, or to ask questions about the process as well. A fifth way, and a very important way, by the way, that you can participate is by filing written comments with the Site Evaluation Committee. Under the law, the Site Evaluation Committee will accept comments throughout the entire pendency of the proceedings. In other words, right up until the time that they take their vote, they will accept written public comment. And the statute requires the committee to consider and weigh information and reports that come in from the public. And finally, any member of the public who can demonstrate that they have a right, duty, privilege, immunity, or substantial interest that might be affected by the proceeding can file what's known as a motion to intervene. If they can demonstrate that they will not interfere with the orderly process, and they demonstrate that they have a substantial interest and they are granted intervention status by the chairman of the committee, they will then have all the same rights and privileges as the folks from Northern Pass, as counsel for the public, to participate in the adjudicative process. In other words, they can put on their own witnesses, they can cross-examine witnesses and whatnot. So if you have that type of interest where that is going to be impacted by these proceedings, you do have the right to file a motion to intervene. That motion can be in the form of a letter, but you have to make sure that you explain those two things. What's the substantial interest that you have, and how you will not interfere, or how the interests of justice and the orderly and prompt conduct of our proceedings would not be impaired by allowing you to intervene. In this particular case, Chairman Honigberg has set February 5, 2016 as the deadline for filing of petitions to intervene in this case. So if you're interested in doing that, you should keep that deadline in mind. And if you have questions about how to file a petition to intervene, there's a couple of things I can tell you to do. You can call Ms. Monroe or you can call me. But you can also look at all of the dockets that are considered by the Site Evaluation Committee on our website. And you can go in there and you can see motions to intervene that have been filed by other parties, or parties in this case, there's already been some filed in this docket, but also in other dockets, and you can see what they've done. The website is actually very helpful to folks that are interested in how we proceed. And then finally, I'm going to talk about what is it that the Site Evaluation Committee actually considers? What are the standards that it applies? And those standards can be found in Section 16 of RSA 162H. First, the Site Evaluation Committee must give due consideration to relevant information regarding the potential siting or routes of a proposed facility. Second, the committee must give due consideration to all of those significant impacts and benefits that I spoke about in the very first slide. And finally, the committee must consider whether the issuance of a certificate will serve the objectives of RSA 162H, which were also contained in that first slide. In order to grant a certificate of site and facility, in other words, to allow a project to go forward, the Site Evaluation Committee has to find by a preponderance of the evidence that the applicant has adequate financial, technical, and managerial capability to assure that the siting, construction, and operation of the facility will occur in continuing compliance with any terms and conditions that are set forth in the permit or certificate. Second, that the project will not unduly interfere with the orderly development of the region. And this next part is very, very important. Consideration having been given to the views of municipal and regional planning commissions and municipal governing bodies. Third, in order to grant a certificate, the Site Evaluation Committee must find by a preponderance of the evidence that the project will not have an unreasonable adverse effect on aesthetics, historic sites, air and water quality, the natural environment, or public health and safety. And then finally, a new consideration or a new requirement in the latest version of the statute is that the Site Evaluation Committee, if they determine to grant a certificate, must be satisfied by a preponderance of the evidence that granting that certificate, in other words, allowing a project to go forward, will serve the public interest. Those are the considerations that the Site Evaluation Committee will use. If you ever go to our website and review some of the prior decisions of the committee, you will see, you'll be able to glean how the committee goes about its work and how it comes to determinations with respect to those various criteria. And finally, once again, our website, the email for our administrator, and our phone number. What I'm going to do at this point in time, we're going to follow the agenda, and I'm going to turn the dais over to the folks from the applicant. They are going to make a presentation about the project to you, and after that, we will begin the question and answer period. Thank you.